Chapter 4. King Edmund of East Anglia is now remembered as a saint, as one of those blessed souls who live forever in the shadow of God, or so the priests tell me. In heaven, they say, the saints occupy a privileged place, living on the high platform of God's great hall, where they spend their time singing God's praises. Forever. Just singing. Beorko always told me that it would be an ecstatic existence, but to me it seems very dull. The Danes reckon their dead warriors are carried to Valhalla, the corpse hall of Odin, where they spend their days fighting and their nights feasting and swiving. And I dare not tell the priests that this seems a far better way to endure the afterlife than singing to the sound of golden harps. I once asked a bishop whether there were any women in heaven. "Of course there are, my lord," he answered, happy that I was taking an interest in doctrine. "Many of the most blessed saints are women." "I mean women we can hump, bishop." He said he would pray for me. Perhaps he did. I do not know if King Edmund was a saint. He was a fool, that was for sure. He had given the Danes refuge before they attacked Eofric, and given them more than refuge. He had paid them coin, provided them with food, and supplied their army with horses, all on the two promises that they would leave East Anglia in the spring and that they would not harm a single churchman. They kept their promises, but now, 2 years later and much stronger, the Danes were back, and King Edmund had decided to fight them. He had seen what had happened to Mercia and Northumbria, and must have known his own kingdom would suffer the same fate, and so he gathered his ford and prayed to his god and marched to do battle. First he faced us by the sea, then, hearing that Ivar was marching around the edge of the great watery wastes west of the Yawash, he turned about to confront him. Ubba then led our fleet up the Yawash, and we nosed into one of the rivers until the channel was so narrow our oars could not be used. And then men towed the boats, wading through waist-deep water until we could go no farther, and there we left the ships under guard while the rest of us followed soggy paths through endless marshland, until at long last we came to higher ground. No one knew where we were, only that if we went south we had to reach the road along which Edmund had marched to confront Ivar. Cut that road and we would trap him between our forces and Ivar's army. Which is precisely what happened. Ivar fought him, shield wall against shield wall, and we knew none of it until the first East Anglian fugitives came streaming eastward to find another shield wall waiting for them. They scattered rather than fight us. We advanced, and from the few prisoners we took, we discovered that Ivar had beaten them easily. That was confirmed next day when the first horsemen from Ivar's forces reached us. King Edmund fled southward. East Anglia was a big country. He could easily have found refuge in a fortress, or else he could have gone to Wessex. But instead, he put his faith in God and took shelter in a small monastery at Deak. The monastery was lost in the wetlands, and perhaps he believed he would never be found there. Or else, as I heard, one of the monks promised him that God would shroud the monastery in a perpetual fog in which the pagans would get lost. But the fog never came, and the Danes arrived instead. Ivar, Ubba, and their brother Halfdan rode to Deak, taking half their army, while the other half set about pacifying East Anglia, which meant raping, burning, and killing until the people submitted, which most did swiftly enough. East Anglia, in short, fell as easily as Mercia, and the only bad news for the Danes was that there had been unrest in Northumbria. Rumours spoke of some kind of revolt. Danes had been killed, and Ivar wanted that rising quenched. But he dared not leave East Anglia so soon after capturing it. So at Deak, he made a proposal to King Edmund that would leave Edmund as king, just as Burghred still ruled over Mercia.